The state cop stayed inside the house, and Reacher saw nothing until the backup arrived more than an hour later. It was an identical cruiser, with another trooper driving and another sergeant riding alongside him. This time the trooper was white, and the sergeant was Hispanic. They got out of their car and walked straight into the house. The heat and the quiet came back. There were animal howls in the far distance, and the whisper of insects and the beating of invisible wings. Lights came on in some of the house windows and then snapped off again. After 20 minutes, the Echo Sheriff left. He came out of the house and stumbled down the porch steps to his car. He looked tired and disoriented. His shirt was dark with sweat. He maneuvered his cruiser out from behind the tangle of police vehicles and drove away. Another hour later, the ambulance came. It had its emergency lights on. Reacher saw the night pulsing red far to the south, and then bright headlight beams, and a boxy vehicle painted red and gold and white, lurching in through the gate. It was marked Presidio Fire Department. Maybe it was the same truck Billy had called the night before. It turned a slow circle in the yard and backed up to the porch steps. The crew got out lazily and stretched and yawned in the dark. They knew they weren't about to be called on for their paramedic skills. They opened the rear doors and took out a rolling gurney, and the backup sergeant met them on the steps and led them inside. Reacher was sweating inside the car. It was airless and hot. He traced in his mind the medics walking through the interior hallways to the bedroom, attending to the corpse, lifting it onto the gurney, rolling the gurney out. It was going to be difficult to handle. There were narrow stairs and tight corners. But they came back out about as fast as was feasible and lifted the gurney down the porch steps. Sloop Greer was just a large, heavy shape on it, wound into a white sheet. The medics lined up the gurney with the rear of the ambulance and pushed. The wheels folded up, and the gurney slid inside, and the medics closed the doors on it. Then they stood around in a group with three of the cops. The trooper who Reacher had offended wasn't there. He must have been guarding Carmen somewhere inside the house. The three cops out in the yard were slow and relaxed. The excitement was over. The deal was done. So they were standing there, a little deflated, and maybe a little disappointed, like cops often get, like something had happened they were supposed to prevent from happening. Reacher knew exactly how they felt. They talked for a couple of minutes, and then the ambulance crew climbed back into their cab and bounced their vehicle across the yard to the gate. It paused there for a second and turned right and headed slowly north. The cops watched it until it was gone, and then they turned together and headed back inside the house. 5 minutes later, they came out again, all four of them, and this time they brought Carmen with them. She was dressed in the same jeans and shirt. Her hair was heavy with water. Her hands were cupped behind her back. Her head was down, and her face was pale and filmed with sweat, and her eyes were blank. The backup cops held an elbow each. They brought her down the steps slowly and clumsily, three people moving out of step. They stopped and regrouped in the dirt and walked her over to their cruiser. The trooper opened the rear door, and the sergeant placed a hand on the top of her head and folded her inside. She offered no resistance. She was completely passive. Reacher saw her shuffle sideways on the seat, looking awkward and uncomfortable with her hands trapped behind her. Then she hitched her feet in after her, pointing her toes, suddenly looking elegant again. The trooper waited a beat and closed the door on her, and Rusty and Bobby came out on the porch to watch her go. Rusty's hair was a mess, like she'd been to bed and gotten up again. She was wearing a short satin robe that shone in the porch lights. It was white, and below it her legs were as pale as the fabric. Bobby was behind her. He was in jeans and a t-shirt, and he was barefoot. They pressed up against the porch rail. Both of their faces were pale and stunned. Their eyes were wide and blank and staring. The backup cops climbed into their cruiser and started it up. The first two slid into the front of Reacher's car and did the same. They waited for the backup to ease ahead and then followed it out to the gate. Reacher turned his head and saw Rusty and Bobby craning to watch them go. The cars paused and turned right together and accelerated north. Reacher turned his head the other way, and the last thing he saw was Ellie stumbling out onto the porch. She was in her rabbit pajamas and was carrying a small bear in her left hand and had the knuckles of her right pressed hard into her mouth. The inside of the cop car cooled right down after about a mile. There was an aperture in the wire grill in front of him, and if he sat in the middle of the seat and ducked his head, he could line it up with the view through the windshield above the radar unit and below the mirror. It was like watching a movie unfold in front of him. The backup car swayed in the headlight beams, close and vivid and unreal in the intense, dusty blackness all around it. He couldn't see Carmen. Maybe she was slumped down in the seat and her head was hidden behind the police lights stacked along the rear shelf behind the glass. "Where are they taking her?" he asked. The sergeant shifted in his seat, answered 100 yards later.
"Pecos," he said. "County jail."
"But this is Echo," Reacher said, "not Pecos." "There are 150 people in Echo County. You think they operate a separate jurisdiction just for them? With jails and all, and courthouses?" "So how does it work?"
"Pecos picks it up, that's how it works. For all little counties, around and about all the administrative functions."
Reacher was quiet for a beat. "Well, that's going to be a real big problem," he said.
"Why?"
"Because Hack Walker is the Pecos DA, and he was Sloop Greer's best buddy, so he'll be prosecuting the person who shot his friend."
"Worried about a conflict of interest?"
"Aren't you?"
"Not really," the sergeant said. "We know Hack. He's not a fool. He sees some defense counsel about to nail him for an impropriety, he'll pass on it. He'll have to. What's the word? Excuse himself?"
"Recuse," Reacher said.
"Whatever. He'll give it to an assistant. And I think both the Pecos ADAs are women, actually, so the self-defense thing will get some sympathy."
"It doesn't need sympathy," Reacher said. "It's plain as day."
"And Hack's running for judge in November," the sergeant said. "Bear that in mind. Lots of Mexican votes in Pecos County. He won't let anybody do anything that'll give her lawyer a chance to make him look bad in a newspaper. So she's lucky, really. A Mexican woman shoots a white man in Echo, gets tried for it by a woman ADA in Pecos, couldn't be better for her."
"She's from California," Reacher said. "She's not Mexican."
"But she looks Mexican," the sergeant said. "Ask what's important to a guy who needs votes in Pecos County."
The two state police cruisers drove on in convoy. They caught and passed the ambulance just short of the school and the gas station and the diner at the crossroads, left it lumbering north in their wake.
"The morgue's in Pecos, too," the sergeant said. "One of the oldest institutions in town, I guess. They needed it right from the get-go. Pecos is that kind of place."
Reacher nodded behind him. "Carmen told me," he said. "It was the real Wild West."
"You gonna stick around?"
"I guess so. I need to see she's okay.
She told me there's a museum in town. Things to see, somebody's grave." "Clay Ellison's," the sergeant said. "Some old gunslinger."
"Never killed a man who didn't need killing." The sergeant nodded in the mirror.
"That could be her position, right? She could call it the Clay Allison defense."
"Why not?" Reacher said. "It was justifiable homicide any way you cut it." The sergeant said nothing to that. "Should be enough to make bail, at least," Reacher said. "She's got a kid back there. She needs bail, like, tomorrow." The sergeant glanced in the mirror again.
"Tomorrow could be tough. Here's a dead guy in the picture, after all. Who's her lawyer?"
"Hasn't got one."
"She got money for one?"
"No."
"Well, shit," the sergeant said.
"What?" Reacher asked.
"How old's the kid?"
6 and a half. The sergeant went quiet.
"What?"
Reacher said again.
"Having no lawyer is a big problem, is what? Kid's gonna be 7 and a half before Mom even gets a bail hearing."
"She'll get a lawyer, right?"
"Sure. Constitution says so. But the question is when. This is Texas."
"You ask for a lawyer, you don't get one right away?"
"Not right away. You waited a long, long time. You get one when the indictment comes back. And that's how old Hack Walker is going to avoid his little conflict problem, isn't it? He'll just lock her up and forget about her. He'd be a fool not to. She's got no lawyer. Who's to know? Could be Christmas before they get around to indicting her. If by which time old Hack will be a judge, most likely, not a prosecutor. He'll be long gone. No more conflict of interest. Unless he happens to pull the case later, whereupon he'd have to excuse himself anyway.
Recuse.
Whatever. Not having her own lawyer changes everything.
The trooper in the passenger seat turned and spoke for the first time in an hour.
See, he said, didn't matter what I call it on the radio.
So don't you spend your time at the museum, the sergeant said. You want to help her, you go find her a lawyer. You go beg, borrow, or steal her one.
Nobody spoke the rest of the way into Pecos County. They crossed under Interstate 10 and followed the backup car across more empty blackness all the way to Interstate 20, about 100 miles west of where Reacher had forced his way out of Carmen's Cadillac 60 hours previously. The sergeant slowed the car and let the backup disappear ahead into the darkness. He braked and pulled off onto the shoulder 100 yards short of the cloverleaf.
We're back on patrol from here, he said. Time to let you out.
Can't you drive me to the jail?
You're not going to jail. You haven't done anything. And we're not a taxicab company.
So where am I?
The sergeant pointed straight ahead.
Downtown Pecos, he said. A couple miles that way.
Where's the jail?
Crossroads before the railroad, in a courthouse basement.
The sergeant opened his door and slid out and stretched. Stepped back and opened Reacher's door with a flourish. Reacher slid out feet first and stood up. It was still hot. Haze hid the stars. Lonely vehicles whined by on the highway bridge, few enough in number that absolute silence descended between each one. The shoulder was sandy, and stunted velvet mesquite and wild indigo struggled at its margin. The cruiser's headlights picked out old, dented beer cans tangled among the stalks.
You take care now, the sergeant said.
He climbed back into his seat and slammed his door. The car crunched its way back to the blacktop and curved to the right, under the cloverleaf, up onto the highway. Reacher stood and watched its taillights disappear in the east. Then he set off, walking north, under the overpass, toward the neon glow of Pecos. He walked through one pool of light after another, along a strip of motels that got nicer and more expensive the farther he moved away from the highway. Then there was a rodeo arena set back from the street with posters still in place from a big event a month ago.
There's a rodeo there in July, Carmen had said, but you've missed it for this year.
He walked in the road because the sidewalks had long tables set up on them, like outdoor market stalls. They were all empty, but he could smell cantaloupe on the hot night air.
The sweetest in the whole of Texas, she had said. Therefore, in their opinion, in the whole of the world.
He guessed an hour before dawn, old trucks would roll in, loaded with ripe fruit from the fields, maybe hosed down with irrigation water to make it look dewy and fresh and attractive. Maybe the old trucks would have whole families crammed in the cabs, ready to unload and sell all day, and find out whether their winter was going to be good or bad, lean or prosperous. But really, he knew nothing at all about agriculture. All his ideas came from the movies. Maybe it was all different in reality. Maybe there were government subsidies involved or giant corporations. Beyond the cantaloupe market was a pair of eating places. There was a donut shop and a pizza parlor. Both of them were dark and closed up tight. Sunday, the middle of the night, miles from anywhere. At the end of the strip was a crossroads with a sign showing the museum was straight across. But before the turn, on the right, was the courthouse. It was a nice enough building, but he didn't spend any time looking at it, just ducked around the side to the back. No jail he had ever seen had an entrance on the street. There was a lit doorway in the back wall at semi-basement level, with two cement steps leading down from a parking area. There was a dusty four-cylinder Chevrolet in one corner. The lot was fenced with razor wire and hung with large notices warning unauthorized parkers their cars would be towed. There were yellow light bulbs mounted on the fence posts. Clouds of silent insects crowded each of them. The blacktop was still hot under his feet, no cooling breezes back there. The jail door was scarred steel and had no admittance stenciled across it in faded paint. Above it was a small video camera angled down, with a red diode glowing above the lens. He went down the steps and knocked hard on the door, stepped back a pace so the camera could pick him up. Nothing happened for a long moment. He stepped forward and knocked again. There was the click of the lock, and a woman opened the door. She was dressed in a court bailiff's uniform. She was white, maybe 50, with gray hair dyed the color of sand. She had a wide belt loaded with a gun and a nightstick and a can of pepper spray. She was heavy and slow, but she looked awake and on the ball.